Savitri, Book 9, The Book of Eternal Night, Canto 2, The Journey in Eternal Night and the Voice of the Darkness. This is Part 3. It's on pages 589 through 592. Savitri is now in full argument with Almighty Death. This is a mighty fight to the finish. Death is facing a most formidable adversary. So far, Death has lost every battle in this mighty war. Human Savitri is fighting for everything she is and everything that makes her life worthwhile. She is fighting for the soul of her beloved husband. She is fighting for the rest of her life on earth, the rest of her life to live and work together with He who is her eternal delight. The incarnation of the Divine Mother in Savitri is doing what she has to do at this point in the universal evolution. It is time for the everlasting ancient death process to begin to change for humanity. It is time for a change in all the human attitudes which cause mankind to have to die and to have to be reborn in order to evolve. These attitudes have to change into attitudes which support a much higher life and do not lead to giving up and to dying. It is time for people to be conscious of fighting away the death process. Mother explained that when a person dies and leaves their body, a being comes to take their spirit. Out of her own experience, Mother said that different beings are there for different countries, different cultures, and different religions. She said this was a formidable organization, the organization of the death process. What people experience as the god of death who comes to take them is a personalized, subtle formation of the vital being who does this work all over the world. The particular death being that Savitri is fighting with has the same consciousness as all the others. Through this being, the source of the organized consciousness that works, always works, to make death successful, now has to face the power and the presence of the Divine Mother. This being also has to face the woman, Savitri. He is fighting for his very existence. He is part of a process which will now have to change as the universal evolution progresses, and he does not want to change. The being who is called the God of Death has used his power and done his own job since the beginning of life on Earth. Up to now, so far, almost all beings living in bodies go through the endless cycles of birth and death and rebirth more or less consciously. This job is the only thing death knows how to do, the work of taking people out of life when they have left their body. There are people who have become very conscious and who can go through another process of keeping their inner being together when the body has to die and decompose. Therefore, they do not need to lose their consciousness and lose the inner organization of their inner being when they don't have a body any longer. For them, birth is a choice. People whose being is this conscious and this organized go through the whole death process consciously, and they make conscious choices about what they want to do when they no longer have a physical body. It is well known that there are Tibetan lamas who predict their next birth when they know they are going to die. These souls return again and again to continue their work on Earth. It's good for us to know what this really is in the yoga practice. Mother and Sri Aurobindo explain what kind of development is needed to pass consciously through birth and death. We know that we are made up of the physical body, the mind, and the vital being, and our vital being is all our energies and life forces. And we know that our immortal soul is at the center of our being. Each plane of our being is a stage on the way to the next one. Each one blends successively into the next one as we cross the boundaries between them. Our whole creation is a series of the mounting and descending planes of consciousness of the world soul, the universal mental, the universal vital, and the universal physical, from all of which we are made. Our body receives from our mind and our vital. Our mental being and our vital being constantly receive from the universal mental plane and the universal vital plane, and they also give to these universal planes. But our physical bodies are made of earth. Our physical bodies live on the physical plane, which is hard and rigid compared with the other planes. The physical body is subject to nature's slow, hard laws. Our body becomes the victim and the object of our mental thoughts and vital impulses. And we have to deal with what we have done to our own body with our thoughts and feelings as we grow older. It is clear that when there is universal evolution on any plane, it is also our evolution at the same time. Here we can see why Mother said that if our bodies cannot keep up with the rhythm of the universal evolution, it creates an imbalance with the mind and vital, and eventually the body is no good any longer, and it has to be changed for a new one. Mother says the body progresses, but because it dies, the physical progress is lost. The body can reach a certain point of ascent, but it comes down again. The vital being, if it knows how to get connected with the universal force, it can very easily have no retrogression. It can continue to ascend. And the mental being, it is absolutely certain, is completely free from all degeneration if it continues to develop normally. People who have Alzheimer's disease have damaged physical brains, but inside, their mind is good. The non-physical parts of us always make progress as long as they remain coordinated and under the influence of our most subtle part, our soul and its psychic being. Our soul and our psychic being are completely connected with the Supreme in the Supreme's eternal manifesting. And they keep up with the Supreme as the universe progresses. All who create mentally live in their mental activities. If the mental activity is constant, their mind can progress indefinitely. The mind in the human being does not stop functioning even when the physical instrument has deteriorated. If there is brain damage, the mind may no longer manifest its intelligence materially, but the mind itself progresses. It progresses independently of the physical instrument. Nothing can prevent the mind from progressing. from continuing to grow. People who have sufficient physical balance, who have not gone to excesses of any kind, who have not mistreated their body, who have never poisoned themselves, never smoked or drunk alcohol, and so on, these people can keep their brain in relatively good condition. They can progress, even in their expression, till the end of their life. It is only in the last years of their life, if they make a kind of withdrawal into themselves, that they lose their power of expression. But the mind goes on progressing. Here is what happens to everything we are when we die. Since everything that we are comes from some plane, either psychic, mental, vital, or physical, everything returns back to its own place when we die. All this is put together into a single body. And as long as we have a body, all these collected states, each with their own life force, act in our body. And this gives us the feeling that we are a single person. But when we die, we turn out not to be a single person. We have seen that the body decomposes and returns to the earth. That part of our person does that. Then our vital being breaks apart, and each part returns to its proper place in the various planes of the universal vital. It is the same with our mental being. Each part returns to its proper place in the various universal mental planes. Our soul, with our organized psychic being, goes to rest in the world soul. There it will assimilate what it has learned and gained from this particular lifetime, and it will prepare us for our next birth. We have to get to the point where our psychic being does not have to go through this process any longer. This is our key to getting beyond the death process. Sri Aurobindo explained that when we die, we go out of our body through the top of our head. This is the starting process. But this is only part of dying. There is much more. Mother says that when the psychic being leaves the body, the way it leaves depends upon several things. It depends upon the degree of development of the psychic being. It also depends upon the degree of development of all the other parts of a person's being. And it also depends on the conditions of death. It depends a lot on how much the being is unified around the psychic. If you live with spiritual effort, with a great goodwill, if you have a strong desire to do things well, and unselfishness, and a will to progress, you live with your psychic being dominant in you. Everything that has become unified and organized around your psychic being stays with it when you die. If your psychic being is not very developed, when you die, everything that you are scatters, and your soul and psychic being go to rest in the world soul without the rest of your inner being attached to it. Only the parts of the person's vital or mental which have been attached to the divine presence may remain attached to the soul as part of our psychic being. These things could manifest later, in later lifetimes, when our soul decides that they are useful for any particular life. If you live a life of desire, passion, and impulse, you live with your vital being dominant in you. If a person's vital being is only a medley of unorganized impulses, There is nothing that stays together, and the different personalities of the person fall apart and return to their own suitable environments. We don't want this to happen to us. This is why we control and understand our own energies and emotions as we go through life. If you live a life of mental activity, your mind is dominant in you. If your thoughts and ideas and your mental formations are disorganized, your mental being will disintegrate, and all your thoughts and ideas will return to the mental planes. If we want to have a conscious mind after death, we organize it in life. The vital impulses and the mental formations could go into the general pool of vital impulses or mental formations to wait to be used again in someone else. Or they could find their place in a being already existing on Earth. If you live exclusively in your physical consciousness, when the physical disappears, you disappear at the same time. It is finished. Then, when you are about to leave your body, all these other things disperse. Your consciousness is not there. You know nothing about it. Now that we are in the domain of death with Savitri, and we see what she has to do, we see that in order for us to be conscious in death, we have to be conscious in life. The way to do this is to have a developed psychic being. Sri Aurobindo and Mother teach exactly what that means for us as we do the yoga. Here is Mother's explanation of the evolution of our psychic being. It starts out as a psychic presence in our being, capable of growth and capable of following the movement of the evolution. Through successive lives, it builds up a conscious individuality. This happens more quickly when we do the yoga. It is formed progressively around our soul, our spark of divine consciousness, which is at the center of our being. And when it becomes this conscious individuality, it becomes our psychic being. The soul goes on progressing from life to life, evolving through it all, a psychic being of itself. In most human beings, the psychic being is a being in the making for a long time. It does not start out as a fully individualized conscious being, master of itself. It needs all its rebirths, one after another, in order to build itself and to become fully conscious. But in the psychic being, there are two very different kinds of progress. The first is its formation, building, and organization. This progress has an end. There comes a time when the being is fully developed, fully individualized, and master of itself and its destiny. At that point, rebirth is no longer a necessity, and it progresses further from there. It can choose at will. Sri Aurobindo said, "When we are just beginning our psychic evolution and we die, there are beings who help us at the time of our death. We go into a psychic soul sleep, and things are worked out for our next life by our soul. An advanced psychic being does not sleep in the psychic world. It may remain there in its state of blissful immersion, or it may come back for some purpose. A developed psychic being is much more conscious in this transition and works much of it out for itself. When a psychic being at that stage takes birth in a human being, that human is born free. This explains how the Tibetan lamas are able to come back to be reborn in a new body. It is one result of working to become a fully conscious being, of doing the yoga. Over our successive lifetimes, as our psychic being is forming, it has more and more influence on our outer parts. It guides us from behind the veil of our outer consciousness. It takes form as our outer parts gain higher consciousness. Mother and Sri Aurobindo used the word psychicized. Our outer parts become psychicized, which means taking on more and more of the nature of our immortal soul with its highest divine qualities. Mother speaks of our outer parts forming around our psychic being, or adhering to our psychic being, or being organized around our psychic being. We don't do this work. This action is done by the evolutionary forces of the psychic being itself. And the more our psychic soul consciousness can come into the undeveloped parts of our mind, vital and physical, with its high consciousness, the more it develops as these spiritually influenced parts form around it. The first step for us in the process of the formation of our psychic being is to want to be better, to want to work to have the higher qualities of the soul. If we know that we should have a formed psychic being, we should aspire for that too. Then our job is to reject the lower things we see in ourselves and to put the qualities of the soul in our outer parts. Then our psychic being will grow because these psychicized parts will adhere to it and form it. We become continually more and more conscious. Eventually, we are an organized conscious being, and we don't lose consciousness when we leave the physical body. Mother says, what happens to your physical body depends upon your inner attitude at death. When your physical being is fully developed, when you have worked consciously on your own body and also worked to infuse the body with the higher things from the other parts of your being, it will develop a subtle physical body. This is what Sri Aurobindo calls our true physical. This subtle physical body, or true physical body, will infinitely surpass the limits of your gross physical body. It will be supple enough and have enough plasticity and balance to be able to adhere to the inner part of your being. Your true physical will then be capable of following the soul when it leaves your body at death. If you are fully organized and converted into a single individual with one consciousness and one will, not just a collection of more or less disorganized thoughts and impulses, then you will be conscious after death and preserve a continuity. You have grouped around your central psychic being a fully developed and organized mind, an absolutely surrendered and collaborating vital, and an obedient, docile, and supple physical being. In the Book of Yoga, in Canto 5, Sri Aurobindo explained how Savitri found her soul and how her whole being was changed and psychicized by the soul's influence once the soul became active. So we know that Savitri has an organized psychic being. This was the first major step she had to achieve in order to do what she is doing now. She is clear-minded and strong-willed and able to focus on her purpose and carry it through. The high soul consciousness governs all the parts of her being, and she can face death without worry or fear. In the last part of this canto that we read, death offered Savitri gifts for her life. Savitri demanded that death give to Satchavan whatever Satchavan wanted for his life. And death agreed to restore to Satchavan's father his sight and his kingdom, because this is what Satchavan wished for. Then death again told Savitri to return to life without Satchavan. Again death threatened her with loss of her life. This time death says Savitri has violated great laws by following death. He said, "Back from the grandeur of my perilous realms, go, mortal, to thy small permitted sphere. Hasten swift-footed, lest to slay thy life, the great laws thou hast violated, moved, open at last on thee their marble eyes." Savitri is not threatened at all. Death has no power to move her. She is conscious of her own immortality and her immortal soul. We will see that she is so conscious that she can act beyond the laws which control most people. She is not bound by them. Savitri is living in the soul. She is living in all the high qualities of the soul. Sri Aurobindo speaks of the supreme essence of our soul. He mentions many of the high qualities of the soul that we can work to have. He says that our soul corresponds to the eternal principle of ananda, bliss. He uses the word delight. He says the supreme consciousness is sat chit ananda, existence, consciousness, delight, or bliss. Our soul corresponds to the delight of the Supreme. We can be conscious of the all delight when we live completely in our soul consciousness. Here is how Sri Aurobindo explains it. The fundamental impulse of life itself is to seek for delight. The whole motive of life is to find delight, to possess delight. Delight is the fulfillment of life. The soul is something which is not mind, life, or body, but which holds in itself the flowering of the essence of mind, life, and body into their own peculiar delight of self. It is their opening to and flowering in light, love, joy, beauty, and a refined purity of being. If we want to know what are the higher qualities of the soul, here we have a small list. Light, love, joy, beauty, and a refined purity of being. Sri Aurobindo says, the subliminal soul in us is open to the universal delight which the cosmic soul takes as its own existence. Our real soul within us takes joy in all its experiences. It gathers from them strength, pleasure, and knowledge. It grows by them in its store and plenty. Our secret psychic entity is the true and original conscience in us. It points us always towards truth and right and beauty, towards love and harmony, and all that is a divine possibility in us. And it persists until these things become a major need of our nature. These are the qualities that fill our mind and vital and body when they are psychicized by the soul's presence. It is our job to concentrate on things like truth and right and beauty and love with all of our being all the time. These are the basis of all the attitudes that should replace the negative attitudes which open us to death. When our outer consciousness is full of psychic qualities, our psychic being is not veiled anymore. Then, as Sri Aurobindo says, it can take command of the rest of our being and turn all the instrumental nature to a divine fulfillment. This is the beginning of true spiritual life. We are now able to make ourselves ready for a higher evolution of manifested consciousness than the mental human. At this point in our evolution, we can pass from the mental to the spiritual, and through degrees of the spiritual to the supramental state. This is what Sri Aurobindo and Mother came here for. This is the next step in man's evolution. This is what happened to Savitri when she realized her soul. Then we saw how the next step for her was to realize Nirvana, also called the Nirguna Brahman, the vast emptiness. Then higher things began to come down into her. Her psychicized nature was pure enough to be filled with the highest wisdom and love, and she was expressing things that people marveled at. After that, we saw that Savitri attained cosmic consciousness, the Saguna Brahman, the consciousness of the whole manifestation. She was ready for the complete experience because she had a fully developed psychic being. As Mother said, around her soul was grouped a fully developed and organized mind, an absolutely surrendered and collaborating vital, and an obedient, docile, and supple physical being. This was Savitri's psychic being, her fully organized and conscious psychic being. But to face death, Savitri's physical being had to be left behind. Here in death's domain, her physical being is inactive. We saw in Canto 1 how she rose out of the physical consciousness. Sri Aurobindo wrote that when she thought she would be left behind, her spirit soared at Satchavan, and on a spirit's flaming outrush born, she crossed the borders of dividing sense, and like pale discarded sheaths dropped dully down, her mortal members fell back from her soul. Now Savitri's consciousness is established in love and beauty and truth and right. And she answers death's threat that she will be punished for breaking universal law. This is what she says. Sri Aurobindo writes, "But Savitri answered the disdainful shade, 'World spirit, I was thy equal spirit born. My will too is a law, my strength a god. I am immortal in my mortality. I tremble not before the immobile gaze of the unchanging marble hierarchies that look with the stone eyes of law and fate. My soul can meet them with its living fire.'" In one of the entries in Mother's Agenda, on April 18, 1970, Mother speaks about changing the unchanging laws that seem to be made of stone. At that time, she was speaking about how physical matter is changing because the new consciousness is infusing itself into our physical plane from the subtle physical plane. Back in 1970, over 50 years ago, this influx of the new consciousness was already going on all the time. Sat Prem asks Mother if it is going on in everyone. Mother says, "Yes. Oh, I get letters from people who have astounding experiences, quite out of proportion with their degree of intelligence or development. Astounding experiences. They themselves are astounded. Experiences very different from one another, but I know them all. I know them to be experiences of the subtle physical. People whom I know or not write to me. They come here, or they have read your book, or they have heard of Sri Aurobindo, or... and they describe it as I might describe it myself. That is to say, with the full knowledge. And they know nothing. It's quite astounding. Oh." Then Sat Prem speaks. He says, "Yes, and when you are in that subtle physical consciousness, the laws change. You can change the material law if you are in that consciousness." Mother says, "Yes, it doesn't work at all in the same way." Then Sat Prem goes on. He says, "I mean, once or twice, I had such an intense perception that it's almost an experience, even if it's merely mental, that in a certain state of consciousness, all physical laws collapsed." And Mother says, "Yes, yes." Sat Prem says, "They had no power." And Mother answers, "Yes, that's quite true. They have no meaning." Then Sat Prem says, "No meaning, that's right." And Mother goes on, "They have no meaning to such a point that..." I remember one thing last night. Suddenly I saw a functioning, and I said to myself, "Oh, if we knew this, how many things, how many fears, how many combinations, how many would crumble away, would lose all meaning. It was what we see as laws of nature, ineluctable things. It all was absurd, an absurdity." Sat Prem says, "Yes, and I felt it as something flimsy, like a thin film, something without..." These awesome laws were something flimsy. And Mother says, "Yes, yes." Sat Prem goes on, "You could have almost blown them away." And Mother says, "Yes, that's right. Yes, with the true consciousness, it crumbles away." Then there's a silence. And Mother says, "Several times like that, when people tell me they feel as if in front of an ineluctable law, there is this and this, and therefore that is inevitable, the answer is always the same. If you want it so, you are the ones who decide it's ineluctable." So here we have the word ineluctable. The definition of this word is not to be avoided, not to be changed, or not to be resisted. So Mother is saying that it is we who decide that universal law cannot be avoided or changed or resisted. Now that Savitri is fully into her arguments against death's old fixed ideas and processes, we can see that Savitri knows this. She has succeeded in finding her soul and achieving cosmic consciousness. She is living in truth consciousness. She's not afraid of going against any law in order to get Satchavan back. She insists that death gives Satchavan back to her. And she says that she will pursue him no matter where death leads his soul. Death responds by saying that he made the stars and all that is in the stars, and he can destroy it all. Death then tries to frighten Savitri with all his power. He says that she is the blind slave of his force, which is deaf to her cries. Death claims that he is life in all things, but not life that lives and nourishes and goes on. He is life that devours, that eats up, that destroys. Then Death claims that he is the power that makes Savitri sin so he can punish her. He is the one that makes her have desire so she will suffer and finally come all broken and bleeding at last to death. Then, after making this big show of how bad he is and all the terrible things he can do, he tells Savitri to go away. But Death hasn't done anything at all to support all his bragging. So far, it is all empty words. And Savitri does not believe any of it. She believes in love. She tells Death that God's love will help him. She tells Death that love will change him. But Savitri answered, meeting scorn with scorn, the mortal woman to the dreadful Lord. Who is this God imagined by thy night, contemptuously creating worlds disdained, who made for vanity the brilliant stars? Not he who has reared his temple in my thoughts and made his sacred floor my human heart. My God is will and triumphs in his paths. My God is love and sweetly suffers all. Love's golden wings have power to fan thy void. The eyes of love gaze star-like through death's night. The feet of love tread naked hardest worlds. He labors in the depths, exalts on the heights. He shall remake thy universe, O Death. In the Book of Eternal Night, the journey in eternal night, and the voice of the darkness. But Savitri answered the disdainful shade, World Spirit, I was thy equal spirit born. My will too is a law, my strength a god. I am immortal in my mortality. I tremble not before the immobile gaze of the unchanging marble hierarchies that look with the stone eyes of law and fate. My soul can meet them with its living fire. Out of thy shadow, give me back again into earth's flowering spaces, Satyavan, in the sweet transiency of human limbs, to do with him my spirit's burning will. I will bear with him the ancient mother's load. I will follow with him earth's path that leads to God. Else shall the eternal spaces open to me, while round us strange horizons far recede, traveling together the immense unknown. For I, who have trod with him the tracts of time, can meet behind his steps whatever night or unimaginable stupendous dawn breaks on our spirits in the untrod beyond. Wherever thou leadest his soul, I shall pursue. But to her claim opposed, implacable, insisting on the immutable decree, insisting on the immitigable law and the insignificance of created things. Out of the rolling wastes of night, there came, born from the enigma of the unknowable depths, a voice of majesty and appalling scorn. As when the storm-haired titan-striding sea throws on a swimmer its tremendous laugh, remembering all the joy its waves have drowned, so, from the darkness of the sovereign night, against the woman's boundless heart, arose the almighty cry of universal death. Hast thou god wings, or feet that tread my stars? Frail creature with the courage that aspires, forgetting thy bounds of thought, thy mortal role. Their orbs were coiled before thy soul was formed. I, death, created them out of my void. All things I have built in them, and I destroyed. I made the worlds my net, each joy a mesh. A hunger amorous of its suffering prey, life that devours, my image see in things. Mortal, whose spirit is my wandering breath, whose transience was imagined by my smile, flee, clutching thy poor gains to thy trembling breast, pierced by my pangs, time shall not soon appease. Blind slave of my deaf force, whom I compel to sin, that I may punish, to desire, that I may scourge thee with despair and grief, and thou come bleeding to me at the last, thy nothingness recognized, my greatness known. Turn, nor attempt forbidden happy fields meant for the souls that can obey my law, lest in their somber shrines thy tread awake from their uneasy iron-hearted sleep the furies who avenge fulfilled desire. Dread, lest in skies where passion hoped to live, the unknown's lightnings start, and terrified, lone, sobbing, hunted by the hounds of heaven, a wounded and forsaken soul, thou flee through the long torture of the centuries. Nor many lives exhaust the tireless wrath hell cannot slake, nor heaven's mercy assuage. I will take from thee the black eternal grip, clasping in thy heart thy fate's exiguous dole, depart in peace, if peace for man is just. But Savitri answered, meeting scorn with scorn, the mortal woman to the dreadful lord. Who is this god imagined by thy night, contemptuously creating worlds disdained, who made for vanity the brilliant stars? Not he who has reared his temple in my thoughts, and made his sacred floor my human heart. My god is will, and triumphs in his paths. My god is love, and sweetly suffers all. To him I have offered hope for sacrifice, and gave my longings as a sacrament. Who shall prohibit or hedge in his course the wonderful, the charioteer, the swift? A traveler of the million roads of life, his steps, familiar with the lights of heaven, tread without pain the sword-paved courts of hell. There he descends to edge eternal joy. Love's golden wings have power to fan thy void. The eyes of love gaze star-like through death's night. The feet of love tread naked, hardest worlds. He labors in the depths, exalts on the heights. He shall remake thy universe, O death.